Good morning and welcome to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers and I am joined as always by my fabulous co-host Linda Perkins. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Marianne.
It's blustery.
It is. I don't know why I rolled down my window, but I did, and it was like I'm like, "Oh, I'm not going to do that again." And then I had water on my glasses.
Yeah, the thing about glasses sometimes, oh my gosh, steam and rain,
yeah,
counterproductive to actually seeing anything. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you braved the elements and got here, because it is a good day to just stay home and be tucked in.
And at least, I mean, I think you're right, it's blustery, it's not like full on stormy, so I wasn't dodging trees or anything on the way in, you know?
Yeah, that's good, but it ain't over, so you know, heads up, everybody, seriously.
And the dump road's open. What?
What?
I mean, it's been open for a while, but it's just so fun to be able to take like an efficient and timely way in.
Yeah, yeah, but also tree lined.
Yes.
So, you know, that's always exciting in a blustery situation. Oh, my gosh. Hey, I have some news that I think might be of interest specifically to you.
Is it earth shattering?
No.
Okay, but I'll take it anyway.
You might think it is, though, because I know that you have a penchant for freezers, and I got a new freezer.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. You're so lucky.
Are you?
I'm not allowed to get another one because it would put me into the, like, two digits.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm counting the ones that are on refrigerators, but.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not either. We had a chest freezer that worked until it was ready to retire, and we didn't know it was until it just gave up and retired.
Until it didn't.
Yeah. So we got a new one, and I converted from a chest freezer to an upright freezer.
Awesome.
I can't tell you how much better that is.
Yeah.
I know that it always depends on things. You know, there are energy considerations between the two styles. There are what you actually do with your freezer. Mm-hmm. But for what we do with our freezer, having that upright freezer is just the best.
Yeah.
I love it. Everything is completely easily organized, and you can see, and I'm not digging around and finding something like an archaeological dig where you find something that's been there for 3 years at the bottom of a pile of whatever.
Yeah.
So I really, really, really like it. And one of the things that I discovered in moving into my new freezer is that it's so, I buy soup from you, and I put it in it, all of the tubs of all of the frozen, anything that's in a frozen quart fits in the door racks of my freezer.
Oh, nice.
So I can see exactly what I have. And so I'm highly recommending, like, two thumbs up on upright freezers.
Well, and I'm so, I really like being able to make something in a decently large batch and then freeze a bunch and have it in the freezer ready for when I don't want to cook. But one thing that I have done a little too much of is I have put things in quart Ziploc bags. And they aren't like super conducive to shelves, you know.
Yeah.
They're super conducive to tossing into a chest freezer. And so I have, and this is not even beautiful, because I'm sure there's many beautiful solutions, but I have a couple of those just like avocado boxes from Costco where they, in their display, they keep the avocados in them. They just fit perfectly into my freezer. And it's like a drawer of quart bags of fruit, you know, that's frozen, you know, that kind of thing. And so that works really well. And I know that they have lucite things that you can see in and are very pretty, but I'm not going to buy more plastic. So
Yeah. So we can usually find something.
Yeah, but it is kind of the hillbilly solution.
Our apologies to hillbillies. They have some good solutions.
I know. Sorry, that wasn't very nice. Oh, that's just like my default, not nice.
It isn't like we can't have hillbillies here because we got the hills.
Yes.
I don't know.
And we got bills.
Yeah, we got the music, too.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
That's a big thing. I remember when the refrigerators came out that are French door and they have the freezer in the bottom, which just makes so much sense. And and so you could see everything in your refrigerator. You weren't getting your ear down against the floor to see what produce you had on the bottom shelf of your refrigerator, you know. And it was just such a change. It was just so much more user friendly, and it's just such a big thing to get a shiny new appliance that's like upgraded like 20 years, not just in how it works, but just how it's designed, you know?
Yeah, it is a demonstration of the fact that products can actually get a lot better over time and that they last a long time, and you're so shocked when you get a new one.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know they had this.
You know, it was Paul from J&S Appliance. He tells a story about over on the peninsula, he replaced, you know, they're an appliance store, replaced one of those really super big, like twice as long as a regular chest freezer, you know, and he was pulling everything out of it. The woman who it died and she needed one immediately because it died was quite elderly. So he was doing all the pulling everything out. And in the bottom, he found a piece of meat that was wrapped in butcher paper and it said Ilwaco Meat Packing 1947.
Oh my
Isn't
gosh.
That something?
Oh. You want to get that thing right back in the freezer because, you know, once it thaws.
Well, and then he said, ma'am, do you want me to throw this away? And she's like, nope.
Really.
And so then he was super careful to load it back up in reverse order, you know, so that that stuff would be on the very bottom. So, you know, she wouldn't be eating it. But I just thought that was just such a story. 1947.
Well,
I mean, that's like so long ago. I mean, it's.
I know. But when I was unloading my dead chest freezer and putting everything quickly into coolers with blue ice so I could, you know,
save it.
Yes. there was an alarming amount of stuff that just did not deserve to be saved.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, some packages of things that got frozen and they were years old, not quite decades old, really.
No.
So I do have that going in my favor. But, I mean, that's what happens with chest freezers.
I wonder how many presidential administrations that is to 1947. 80.
What were they eating
some
then?
Years.
What were you going to do with that piece of meat?
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of what were you going to do with that piece of meat, I tried a brand new chicken recipe last night.
Oh, yeah?
And I really liked it.
Really?
Yes.
Did you do it like how it's written?
Yes.
Oh, and you really liked it.
The only thing I changed was it wanted me to like chiffonade some parsley or some cilantro or some mint or something to sprinkle over the top, and I had no fresh herbs.
Okay.
So I dispensed with that garnish.
Okay.
And it was just really good. It was an Eric Kim recipe, and I like Eric Kim very much. I like his take on flavor profiles, and this one was really good. It was bone in, skin on chicken thighs, which, by the way, side note, no matter what kind of chicken thigh the recipe calls for, I have the other kind usually.
Yes,
you know, I have the boneless, skinless. No, I have the kind with it's crazy. Anyway, now that I have this new freezer, maybe I should just have all the kinds.
Yes,
I don't know. Anyway, I specifically looked up in my computer bone-in skin-on chicken thighs.
Because you knew you had them.
Yeah. Don't be like confusing me. Don't be wasting my time. So I found this recipe by Eric Kim. It's called Crispy Chicken with Lime Butter.
Oh, numb.
It is so
really?
Seriously good. And, you know, it's pan-sautéed chicken thighs. Nothing special there. You know, a little oil in the pan, skinned side down, medium heat, give them time. It takes about 20 minutes for the skin to get crispy, and they're almost all done by then, and then you just flip them over for another 5 or 10 minutes until the temp's right. But it's the pan sauce. because when you crisp them up slow like that, you get a lot of schmaltz.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So good. Extra that you don't need for this recipe, but you got leftover. It's like bonus.
Duck fat's poor cousin.
Yes. Poor delicious cousin.
Yes.
So anyway, it's just the it's the schmaltz left over in there, and then you're adding fresh lime juice and crushed garlic, chicken stock, a little bit of chicken stock, some maple syrup, and simmering it until it thickens up, and okay. then at the last, well, to really thicken it up at the end after it's all kind of bubbled together for a few minutes, adding cold butter, mm-hmm. and it gets really silky and mm-hmm. lovely syrupy. That stuff was so good. Then you're just putting the thighs on a plate and drizzling this over, and I had made some roasted sweet potatoes to go on the side, and I just put that pan sauce over everything.
Okay.
It was really good.
Nice. Nice. Really. It sounds really good.
It was savory.
And it sounds a little different, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not very often pairing lime and chicken unless I'm making, like, you know, a Thai salad.
Yeah.
You know?
Or tacos, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True. Yeah.
But yeah, that's right. And I would not normally think to put lime juice with maple syrup.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't know, I default to, I use a lot more lemons.
Yep,
than
I think
limes.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
And it was my friend Georgia who used lime liberally and taught me. I mean, I think it's so much better than lemon and coleslaw, but she taught me that. And so I have done it on occasion.
Yeah.
But that sounds really good. It was called Crispy Chicken with Lime
Excuse me.
Eric Kim.
Yep.
Okay.
With lime butter.
With lime butter. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll try it.
Yeah. Try it. Look it up. Look up. Eric Kim. He's everywhere.
See, I'm not familiar with him.
If you find him and start looking through his stuff, he's a cook, but he's also a recipe developer and
okay.
tester, and his stuff is, you particularly would love his flavor profiles because he does a lot of Asian-inspired.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Well, and then the New York Times. I mean, I always trust him. I bought a New York Times cookie book. It's written by,
Von Vreeland.
Yes, Von Vreeland. That's just not a name that rolls off the tongue. You know, you think of it more as like a Scrabble win.
How many people have VV for their
initials? I know.
Yeah,
I am very, very. So my friend Patty told me about it. She bought it for her daughter, I think. But yeah, it's a pretty good book and it's pretty interesting. I haven't made anything out of it because it's actually still warm from from its travels to my house. But it looks really interesting. I there's some pinwheel cookies,
uh-huh.
I think with pistachio and stuff, and just some really good looking cookies. And I bought another book. You know, Dale kind of put the lockdown on cookbooks.
What? And does that work?
For a while. But, you know, I got a new bookcase. Anyway, so I bought I thought it was a salad book. It's called Linger. And it's not very Asian, but it's very Asian inspired. But because I think some article on the internet profiled one of the recipes and it was a salad recipe and they were talking about the salad book, but it's salads and sweets. Isn't that an odd combination?
Oh yeah, but interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I wasn't expecting that, but the salads are all really interesting. They have things that I normally don't have like a kohlrabi based salad. You know, that's not like my main ingredient.
Uh-huh.
There's one with eggplant that is really good. I had some eggplant, so it calls for Japanese eggplant, which I think would be way better. But I had a regular eggplant, so they are like steaming it in logs, you know, or like uh-huh. ribbons, not ribbons. Oh, come on, brain, like finger sized pieces.
Okay.
And I chopped, because I had a regular eggplant, I chopped it into discs and they're steaming it and I grilled it. So I didn't do what you did. I didn't do what they said to do, but it was really good. It's just oil and ginger and Thai chili dressing with soy sauce as the sort of acid type thing. And it was just, it was really good. It wasn't super complicated or unusual, but there were a lot of unusual salads in there, and how they were praising her on the internet, like on it's the time of year for the end of year 10 best cookbook type lists. You know,
yeah.
She's on a lot of them, this book. And so I'm going to try them because there's a lot of people who really like her. So
right.
I'm excited about that.
Yay. New salads.
I know, but such a strange thing. Here's your salad and your cake.
Well, it's meal and a dessert.
I know, but I just, it's just, we, I used to work for a French restaurant and they had this horrible satellite in a mall, this food, not kiosk, but just place. And they called it, because they were French and they thought it was a great name, Fish and Quiche. And it was just the idea of the two. It's not horrible, but it just sounds so horrible.
How did that do business-wise?
Oh, not very well. But Fish and Quiche, such a bad name.
You know, I was thinking when you were talking about that there's a variety of kinds of cooks, and some people follow recipes just like they're written. And I think that is really admirable, and your odds of it turning out the way the person who made the recipe wanted it to are very high. But then there are people who, for a variety of reasons, one, maybe just a rebellious attitude, but maybe also just wanting to try it but don't have all exactly the right ingredients, and so we're going to get close and see what happens. And I think that's probably a more common thing, because how many of us have every single thing unless we're out there shopping for the ingredients? So it's so seldom that I follow a recipe exactly, because I don't have lime.
Well, there's people with confidence that shouldn't have confidence and are substituting, you know, kale for cranberries in a cake.
You can't see me raising my hand, but I want to take a second and remind everyone that Food Talk is a co-production of KMUN Community Radio and North Coast Food Web. And if you have not gone to those fine websites, it's not because I haven't told you about them. Northcoastfoodweb.org and KMUN.org. Those places are full of interesting and useful information, and you really should drop in and check it out.
Yes.
Yes. So we're like 15 minutes from the depths of the holiday season. Hanukkah has already started. Yeah. Christmas coming up.
Do you want to talk about cookies?
Oh, let's.
Should we talk about cookies? So I'm kind of in a rut. I'm not in a rut. I mean, I've worked really hard to have recipes, you know, find recipes and that I really, really like. You know what I mean? And that's a big part of taking care of your family and being a cook is, I can make a Reuben, but I really like it when I make it this way, you know, that kind of thing. And it's hard because you have to go through that process with everything.
Yeah.
So I really like cookies that are kind of crispy. I just do. And part of it for me is that they don't go stale fast at all. I mean, you can keep them for weeks. And then I've never really learned how to make a cookie soft and chewy well, you know, because half the time I'm over baking them. It's such an exact thing. You know, you have to like know for that cookie, for that weight of dough and that shape of dough, when to pull it out of this oven, not the other oven.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that to me is annoying.
And also, I got to say, Linda, with admiration, but seriously, you're a perfectionist when it comes to cooking. And a lot of us are just trying to throw dinner on the table. I mean, really. I've been a home cook for a very long time and on the skirts of the food business for a very long time. But I seriously, there are so many nights when I'm doing something and I have to stop and go make dinner.
Yes, yes.
You know, just really so annoying.
Oh, I have to thaw it out. Oh.
Yeah, right. Well, it's not going to be. It's going to be soup and sandwiches again, hon. Sorry. And I do try to do a decent job of that. But I think it's why I'm more interested in breakfast than dinner, because in breakfast, it's the first thing of the day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not resentful of it taking me away from something else. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think I'm average about that. I think there are a lot of people who don't really spend a lot of time doing the physical research and also the shopping research and all that other stuff. Mostly, I think a lot of us are just getting a meal on the table. Mm-hmm. And there's not as brilliant credit for that, but there's some credit for that.
Yeah. No, it's a good thing. And I'm super lucky because I'm married to Dale and he was in the Coast Guard and they had a rule that if you complained about dinner, then you were the next cook. Seriously. And he's so sure that that's going to happen, you know? And he's like, this is delicious.
I'm sure that it's not that very often. It's not like that. But also he is the fortunate recipient of the research.
Yeah. Well, and because I'm so allergic to crustaceans, any shellfish, then those are the ones that are truly, truly bad, because I'll see him over there and he's like, I mean, that's him, you know, with the shrimp chewing.
So easy. It's so easy to turn them to Nerf shrimp.
I know, and I can't try it. And I don't know because I don't eat it. So I don't know that it's an important thing, or, you know, until I just see him, you know, half an hour later.
It's so yes, fish I think are more forgiving, but shellfish and all those little things, scallops, really, seriously.
Oh, I've done that one too. Oh, that was the worst because we had people over.
Oh,
Dale was polite, but they weren't. Oh,
well, they're not on the re-invite list.
Wait, we are not talking about cookies. How did that happen?
I don't know, but you know, speaking of cookies, Von Vreeland does Cookie Week on the New York Times food site, whatever it is called, every fall between Thanksgiving and Christmas. They have Cookie Week, and he does a different cookie every day. And that particular exercise has shown me some really, really interesting looking cookies.
Yeah. I remember I tried they did the pie week. I don't think it was him. I remember doing the pies, not this year, but last year. And that was interesting.
Yeah.
But I didn't really love any of them. I think they've been doing it so long that they have to come up with something new, and that's hard. You know what I mean? I think that might have been the problem there. So I did discover, I did not invent it. I saw somebody talking about it in a comment section of a recipe on the internet. That you know how it's always hard to find a recipe that's delicious, that for cookies that will hold a shape, you know, when you do like a Springerly or a cookie stamp or something like that. And so she made some cookies and she said they turned out all puffy, and so you couldn't see the pattern at all. So what she did is, while her cookies were hot, she just took her stamp and she just pressed it into them. She said she pressed lightly. She didn't press super hard so that the cookies got dense, you know, but just enough to see the pattern. I'm like, well, duh, of course that would work.
Yeah, that's so intuitive. And why do we not think of that?
And then
ourselves?
You could use any recipe. You don't have to use those hardtack cookie recipes, you know. So anyway, I'm going to do that because I think that sounds great.
Yeah.
And I have lots of presses that I really like.
Ooh, Springerly.
Yeah.
It's that season.
Yes.
That would be so good. Yeah. Right now, a black coffee and a plate of Springerly.
Do you like
them?
Do you like them when they're anise flavored?
Yes.
Okay. I do
love
too.
Them. I love them so much.
Black licorice
and
they're
rare. I mean, they're not out there in the world everywhere, especially.
No, they're hard. That's why.
Yeah.
They're like macarons in that you want to get a foot on them, and you have to cure the plate when it's raw. You know, before you bake it, you have to let it sit a long time, like a day, and then just the also curing the cookies after. You're supposed to cure them for like 3 weeks. I mean, it's a real, real process. It's not.
That's why they're so
delicious. For the lighthearted,
apparently that's why.
Yeah.
Because they are so good and they're so rare. Probably if we lived in a major metropolitan area, there would be bakeries doing those.
That's probably, I think of it as such an old grandma thing, you know. And then it's so easy now just to make biscotti and go, here, dip this in your coffee.
Well, and
I got my 2.5 days back.
We're really happy to do that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We are not feeling at all chagrined about having to do that.
Yeah.
That's not a sacrifice. Biscotti dipped in espresso. Yipes. Those Italians, I'm telling you.
Yeah, they make good cookies.
And they make great coffee.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I got to say, we're in the Pacific Northwest, and nobody makes better coffee than us. They might make different coffee than us, but we have access to fabulous coffee.
No, here. There's great places here in Astoria that make just delicious beans. It's remarkable.
Yeah. It's lucky.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Yeah.
And there's more than one. It's not just like there's one great one.
I know.
And it's not like you're being nice to the other one, you know? I mean, they're great. They're just great. You're so right.
It's just two more things that make us happy to be here. Coffee and beer. We got it. We got it. No matter what your thing is within those categories, we've got it for you. It's just like a couple of the 10 billion reasons why we're so lucky to be here in these gale force winds. with our roofs blowing up. I'm always like, oh, please don't.
Look at our flags on the KMUN porch.
I know. It's very... I was listening to Joanne Rideout's ship report this morning and thinking how harrowing it would feel to be out on the seas
right now.
Oh,
yeah. I'm not built for that.
No, I'm not the least bit interested. But, I mean, I love to listen to the ship report. I love that. Yeah. But I don't want to be there. I just want it to be tales of adventure and occasionally horror.
My stepson is a commercial fisherman, and I just think about what he sees on a daily basis, you know. It's just, sadly, he's also a man of few words. So, you know, I mean, you could shoot him and he'd be like, ouch.
He's a chip off the old block.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the holidays are coming right up.
Yep.
And we probably should be, well, you know, Christmas will have come and gone by the time we are back on Food Talk.
Oh.
So we can be talking about... the new year, although New Year's is not a big food thing.
No, drinking.
Yeah, drinking.
Yeah.
Not the never my favorite time to be a bartender, New Year's. Right up there with a couple of other times when it seems like everyone has a license to misbehave.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, every couple of years, I talk about making a standing rib roast.
Yes.
If you're going to do that for Christmas. It's Paula Dean who has a really good recipe for it. It's so simple. You just take your roast out of the oven, put it in a rack, in a pan, in a rack with the fat side up, rub it with oil, and then I just use like Montreal steak seasoning, and I just smash it everywhere so that there's as much as I can possibly get on it. You preheat your oven to 375, put it in there for an hour, turn the oven off, let it sit in the oven, do not open the door for 3 hours, and then you turn the oven back on for 40 minutes. You don't wait for it to heat up and then do 40 minutes. You'll have a big pile of gristle. You just turn it back on, and then from the second you turn that knob, you time 40 minutes, and it'll be medium rare. And it works with any size roast because the bigger roasts keep heat in the oven longer, so it cooks more. And then the smaller roasts cool off faster while you have it sitting in the oven with the door shut. And so the whole thing just works out because I've done it with a 6-bone roast. I've done it with a 2-bone roast, and it works. So if you just look up standing rib roast, Paula Dean's recipe, that is a foolproof way to make it. And it's brown and what's the word? Help me. It's not gray and horrible. It's brown and very appealing and delicious and seared looking on the outside, though you don't sear it.
We're out of time.
No, not again.
Yes, we are. Sing us out.
Okay. I'm driving my new freezer. I'm driving my new freezer. I'm driving my new freezer around. It's got wheels and knobs.
Yay.
I'm driving my new freezer. Driving my new freezer. Driving my new freezer downtown. And I'm kind of right beside the backwards clown car, and everybody's wondering.
Wait a minute. That was a confusing original composition.
But you do want to drive your freezer now, don't you?
Yeah, kinda I do. Linda Perkins, thank you so much, and happy holidays to you and everybody.
Yes, same to everybody out there, and thank you so much for your continued support. See you next year.